Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Word in Your Ear is brought to you thanks to NordVPN. And VPN stands for what, Mark?
It stands for Virtual Private Network.
Testing. Try again. What's it stand for, Mark?
Virtual Private Network.
That is absolutely correct. And that's a way to keep your data safe on the internet whenever you're logging in, either at home or abroad, or in an internet cafe, or wherever. VPN protects your identity and encrypts your data so that nobody can steal that identity. And at the same time, here's the fun bit, it enables you to access the internet via servers in more than 50 different countries. And this means you can often sidestep region restrictions and stream movies and TV programs from all around the world. And I've been doing just that this very morning, Mark. While waiting for Alex to get out of the shower. I was looking at...
Plenty of opportunity.
I was enjoying the many splendors of Swedish Netflix, which has the most wonderful repository of strange old British comedy programs and TV films. I think I watched a bit of Mutiny on the Buses this morning.
Oh, my Lord, how wonderful.
I also saw The Lovers, starring Richard Beckinsale and Paula Wilcox from the early 70s. I saw a comedy called A French Mistress, which is set in the kind of never-never land of an English boys' public school of the 1950s, where the headmaster is Cecil Parker and James Robertson Justice is among the staff.
This is perfect British kind of sexual fantasy stuff, isn't it?
Honestly.
A public school and a French mistress.
They have to get a new French teacher. Wow. They can't get a man, so they're going to get a woman. Wow.
She's double wow.
She's a miss. She's not even a missus. She's in her 20s. And three lemons, anything off the top shelf, would you like a cuddly toy or a goldfish? She's French.
She's French even more.
And therefore...
And the French are pretty loose, we're told. Ha, ha, ha.
So she can't come in a room without a frowsy trombone going, wah, wah, wah.
And then when there's a failed advance by a small schoolboy, there's a bar. It's like a scene from Danny Baker's autobiography. Do you remember that scene where the teacher falls in love with them at school and invites them round for supper? Oh, it's absolutely extraordinary.
So I've also been watching a bit of one of my favourite films, the 1948 film of Graham Greene's Brighton Rock, which you must know, with Dicky Attenborough as Pinky and William Hartnell is in it and so forth. Have you never seen that?
God,
it's brilliant. Because all the exteriors are shot in Brighton. And obviously at the time, Brighton was trying to give itself a new post-war, slightly more upmarket reputation, which can be the only explanation for the fact that at the beginning of the film, you get a really long caption before anything happens. And the caption reads as follows, Mark. I actually transcribed it. Here we go. This is what it says at the beginning of Brighton Rock, 1948, before you see any of the action. It says, Brighton today is a large, jolly, friendly seaside town in Sussex. But in the years between the two wars, there was another Brighton of dark alleyways and festering slums. From here, the poison of crime and violence and gang warfare began to spread. This is a story of that other Brighton, now happily no more.
Isn't that fantastic?
That's a brilliant opener. My God.
It's like it's not like that anymore. Was it Keith
Dream
Water?
On. Yeah.
Was it Keith Water? Has I spend a lot of time in Brighton because my wife comes from around there. And Keith Waterhouse famously, the best ever quote about Brighton. It says, Brighton is a town that always looks as if it ought to be helping the police with its inquiries.
That's fantastic. That's brilliant. I can remember I lived there for a while. I remember doing my first London to Brighton bike race and arriving and being greeted by the Bangkok Ladyboys, guys who've been up all night, clearly in a nightclub, just come out to see the men in Lycra arriving. I thought, this place is so brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, can you still say that? Well, we shall soon find out.
Yeah.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Kate Bush on Woman's Hour. Did you hear it, Dave?
I didn't.
Fantastic.
Was it?
It's fantastic because...
What did she say?
She said virtually nothing.
Oh, really?
Absolutely nothing. And it didn't kind of matter. Catherine Moran came on. Catherine Moran, his job was just to provide the build-up. We are about to hear from Kate Bush, you know, and she talks about her being a pioneer. And she's absolutely right. I think Catherine Moran's brilliant. Everything she said was right. Pioneer. She's the first person to start using those kind of headsets, her dance moves, the fact she was a girl nerd and learned about technology and had all this kind of fairlights in her studio, her girlishness, that she was a whole new kind of pop star. She wasn't kind of like Bonnie Tyler or Joan Jett or Chrissy Hynde. She was wafting about in kind of girly dresses, you know, that she wrote songs about washing machines like Mrs. Bartolozzi. Catherine Moran was saying, this is the female equivalent of a man writing a song like, I'm waiting for my man. This is what women do. They put clothes in washing machines. I thought she was absolutely right. I thought it was a really good point, you know. And also that she had a very happy life. Don't be any bad bits. If you read the life of Viv Albertine or Chrissy Hynde or whatever, then, you know, there are all sorts of things go wrong. Nothing appears to have gone wrong.
It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's just a really nice story. And then she comes on after all that build-up and talks about she's doing a bit of gardening. And she's very, very pleased that a whole new generation of people have cottoned on to her and how she watches Stranger Things. And, you know, and she doesn't give anything at all away. And yet you're somehow completely thrilled just to hear the voice of Kate Bush. You know, as you were saying, you know, there's like suddenly any utterance is like bring a tablet down from the top of the mountain.
It's funny. I was thinking about when in the early days when I was an editor of Smash Hits, Phil Sutcliffe went and interviewed her. I can't remember what the record was. And she was, you know, hit after hit, you know. She was in the charts. She was part of the furniture, really, Kate Bush just was, you know, and didn't belong to any particular movement or anything. And Phil always used to, rather fancy himself that he kind of broke, he went a bit further than a lot of interviews.
Yeah, that's right.
Or whatever. Doug Deep. He just did. And I remember he came out with this interview with her. And one of the things she talked about was menstruation. And
was this for Smash Hits?
This was Smash Hits.
Yeah.
And I just kind of looked at this. Oh, okay. All right. Fine. And I just, you know, left it in. The whole thing ran. I'm sure I kind of, you know, Phil kind of put it in. Sort of hoping I was going to say, well, I'm not sure about that, Phil.
Then he could complain about it.
But no, I just said, no, no, fine. Okay, put it in. And it ran in the magazine and it ran completely without remark, absolutely from anybody, from readers, from anybody at all. Whereas, you know, and that was kind of the 80s. Whereas 20, 30 years later, anything like that would be regarded as, this is a major breakthrough.
I know.
You know what I mean? That's the really odd thing, is the kind of level of fuss as compared to the level of activity nowadays is completely out of kilter. Whereas when all that stuff was going on, when Kate Bush was just around, nobody made that fuss at all. Strikes me. It's just, you know, everybody is very keen on the significance of something. Actually, this relates to something we had noted down. Billie Eilish played Glastonbury, you know, youngest person ever to headline Glastonbury. What is she, 20 or something like that?
She's 20.
She's 20. Fair enough, you know. But then I was thinking, Stevie Wonder turned 21 in 1971.
Yeah.
21. So that's when he first signed his first adult contract with Motown. So prior to that, he'd had a kind of juvenile contract. But during that juvenile period, he'd had hits with Fingertips, I Was Made to Love Her, Uptight, My Sharia Moore, For Once in My Life, Signed, Sealed, Delivered, Heaven Help Us All, and a load more.
It's amazing.
It's an unbelievable achievement.
Well, there are various of these. We were talking about yesterday, weren't we? Jackson Browne wrote These Days when he was 16. Steve Winwood, I'm just reading Chris Blackwell's autobiography because we're going to be interviewing him quite soon. It's really interesting. I mean, Steve Winwood was 14.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, Chris Blackwell had to be his legal guardian he was in Spencer Davis.
I went to see Spencer Davis on a package tour in 65, 66. And he was introduced as Little Stevie Winwood.
Which
was a kind of play on Little Stevie Wonder, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he'd been taught by Spencer Davis, hadn't he? Spencer Davis was a geography teacher, I think, or something like that.
That's right.
And he'd been a pupil of his at school.
Incredible. Now, he was 14. He was 18 when he filmed Traffic, you know. And Millie Small. I mean, Millie Small was 14 when she met Blackwell. I think she's about 15 or 16 when My Boy Lollicup.
Yeah, when he brought her all the way over to the UK, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, he had to get a letter from my mother signing an agreement that it was okay for this 14-year-old girl to go off with this middle-class, white British guy who claimed that he was going to kind of make her a successful career.
Get this, Mrs. Small, I'm going to make her a star.
Yeah, there's going to be cash in it for you. It's absolutely incredible, really. And there's a really moving bit in the book, actually, where he goes back to Jamaica with her after all this worldwide success. That record, My Boy Lollipop, is a huge hit all over the world, and I remember clearly. And when she gets to the airport, her mother is there to greet her, and she's the most famous person in Jamaica. And her mother stands there kind of paralyzed with awe, really, and simply curtsies to her own daughter.
Really?
And at that point, he thinks this is somehow kind of wrong.
Yeah.
And he gets out of the whole pop music business and goes into rock and roll. It's really interesting, actually. But others, Rankin Roger was 16 in the Beat. Alex Chilton
was
16
really?
In the Box Tops.
Yeah, he was. Alex Chilton was very young.
Alex Chilton was 16 in the Box Tops. Peter Frampton, 16 in the Herd. Annabella Lewin, 15 in Bow Wow Wow. That I still can't believe the Bow Wow Wow story. That a 15-year-old girl could have been making records like that. It's astonishing. I watched a bit of Billie Eilish on the telly last night. They had the Glastonbury highlights, who I thought was really good, actually. But it's very interesting because Billie Eilish's show, I've never seen it before, consists of her brother and a drummer, and that's it, and her singing at the front, and everything else is on some huge, great sound bed. But she manages to hold the attention through this. I mean, they're very good songs, and she's quite charismatic. But through this absolutely astonishing, Sonne Lumiere. You know, it's an amazing light show. There's pyrotechnics, there's fireworks going off. You know, and I thought, she's headlining, but would this work in the afternoon? I mean, if it's all about smoke and lights,
you simply
couldn't do it in broad daylight. You know,
no.
It also struck me how at Glastonbury, if you're actually there. Rock bands really, really work. Rock music carries that huge distance down the valley. But on the telly, it's the dance acts that work. TLC were absolutely fantastic doing No Scrubs. They're followed by Sam Fender, about whom I know nothing, who was monumentally dull. Just earnest guy with guitar with Ed Sheeran choruses, And it's funny how...
Say monumentally dull again. I love the way you
monumentally dull. It's pretty damning, isn't it?
It's funny this business about daylight, because I've got you're saying that Santana, all of Santana were under 22.
All under 22. I think they were. I think the youngest one was it. Greg Worley was 19. I think Carlos Santana was 21. God. But and the whole group, all six members of Santana, the interesting thing
about Santana at Woodstock is they were really good.
They're fantastic.
They were fantastic.
That's one of my favourite bits of YouTube. Them doing Soul Sacrifice at Woodstock. It's absolutely.
But also, okay, here we go. Woodstock, okay. And I'm going to give you some acts, and I'm going to ask you to answer.
How old?
Nighttime or daytime?
Oh, okay. That's good.
Okay, here we go. Santana, nighttime or daytime?
Daytime.
Thank you. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, nighttime or daytime?
I think nighttime.
That's correct. Sly and the Family Stone.
Which was the wrong thing completely, wasn't it? A little folk harmony act like that. Sly and the Family Stone, I think daytime.
No, nighttime. Oh, okay. Nighttime. Okay. It was they were definitely a kind of really lit up concept, okay. You know.
All right.
You know, particularly in the film. Richie Havens, nighttime or daytime?
Well, that was definitely daytime because he started the show with a holding his guitar that he'd sort of worn a hole through with his plectrum, hadn't he?
And what was the song that he sang at the beginning of Woodstock?
Well, it was probably Freedom or
It was Freedom.
Children.
It was Freedom. 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 And he just sang Freedom, Freedom, Freedom. And I couldn't help notice that when President Zelensky gave his, you know, his message to the Glastonbury hordes yesterday, he said, this is the kind of the greatest gathering for freedom in the world. I thought to myself, well, all, more power to you, Mr. Zelensky, for getting any exposure you can get. But freedom, it ain't. This is quite an expensive, you know, this is an expensive leisure activity, this is, isn't it?
Yes. Well, there's the freedom to go to a rock festival that I think he's looking at.
Okay, it's the same freedom we have to go to a World Cup final, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's all relative, you know.
Yeah.
But it kind of, it looks like people's image of freedom, you know. But, anybody else from Woodstock? Okay, Joe Cocker and the Greaseman, nighttime, daytime.
Joe Cocker, let me have a think. Nighttime?
Daytime, I think.
Okay.
Pretty sure daytime. Pretty okay. sure daytime. The Who, nighttime or daytime?
Definitely nighttime.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. You've passed, Mark Allen.
Good.
You've passed.
Good. I paid attention.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So watching the fallout from the by-elections this week, which is it's always doubly unfortunate if you're the Prime Minister and you happen to be overseas when these things go on, because you can't help looking rather distant from and not particularly in control. And I thought, surely it's only a matter of time before somebody starts using the headline, Crisis, What Crisis? Which, of course, has a definite musical history to it. And that led me to look into that musical history, which turned out to be a lot more complicated than I thought, Mark. Because you probably, like me, associate the headline Crisis with What Crisis with James Callaghan in 1979.
Yeah, but he never said it, did he?
He never actually said it, but you know, it was seized upon by a Sun headline writer as being the perfect what he would say if he could.
Yeah, yeah.
Crisis, what crisis? And also it has the great virtue of a headline of being short and having a repeated word in it. You know, so
it looks good written down.
It looks really good written down.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And I suppose if you'd asked me, I would have said that Supertramp had then got the idea from that. But that was not the case, was it? The Supertramp record was, I think, made in 1975 or 1976, yeah. Certainly significantly earlier. And that was just, you know, they had one album called Crime of the Century, and then the follow-up, which was much anticipated. And, you know, he's had the picture of the skeletons of the deck chairs, you know, in the midst of planetary devastation. And the title, Crisis, What Crisis? Which you have to say, as album titles go, is a really good title, isn't it?
It's a brilliant title.
And but it was years later that that came into the mainstream. But anyway, even Crisis, What Crisis, was not their invention. I love these things.
I know.
You pull a thread on the rich tapestry of rock and roll, and you always find it always leads to another thing, and then another thing. The line Crisis, What Crisis, comes from your favorite movie and mine. What is that, Mark?
It's The Day of the Jackal.
The Day of the
Jackal. It's a brilliant, brilliant thing where the English guy is the cabinet minister, is in bed with the mistress.
No, because
it's a spy.
She's a spy, French cabinet minister. You know, they're trying to infiltrate.
French cabinet minister, that's right, yeah.
They're trying to infiltrate.
And she's a spy,
cabinet.
And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was on the telephone. I was a crisis." And he says, "Crisis? What crisis?" And she kind of cuddles up to him, and he goes, "Oh, it's nothing." And he goes, "What crisis?" Goes on. She repeats it, doesn't she? And then it cuts because you know that he is going to divulge. And sure enough, comes to a grim end, doesn't he?
Absolutely. So that starts with Day of the Jackal, as all good things do, is taken up by Supertramp, is then taken up by the Sun, placed in the mouth of the innocent James Callaghan.
Yes.
And it's still part of the kind of the parlance now, all those years later.
Yeah.
Isn't pop music a wonderful thing?
It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm a bit of a student of things that people said, but they never actually said.
Oh, go on.
Let Them Eat Cake.
What did you say?
Let Them Eat Cake is brilliant. Let Them Eat Cake, Marie Antoinette. She never said that. And that was a deliberate thing by a journalist at the time to make her out to be the kind of a clueless ditz.
Yeah.
The kind of ridiculous thing that the rich people would say.
Yeah.
She never said it. There's a sucker born every minute attributed to P.T. Barnum. Actually, nobody has the faintest idea who said that, but he did.
Really?
A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting its shoes on. That's been attributed to Thomas Jefferson, Mark Twain, and Winston Churchill. None of them said it either.
Yeah.
And the nearest source that's even close to it is Jonathan Swift once said, which is a great quote actually, "Falsehood flies and truth comes limping after it," which appeared in one of his 1710 works. In our lifetimes, Ringo is not even the best drummer in the Beatles.
No.
It's a classic, isn't it? Everyone goes, "Oh, John Lennon said that." John Lennon never said that.
I know.
Never. It's a monstrous thing to say. It was Jasper Carrot, wasn't it?
Years later, yeah.
And you were, of course, present at one of the famous ones. "Give me the fucking money. Give us the fucking money." Which Bob Goddard never said.
Never said.
What he said was, "Fuck the address." Fuck the address. Just give us the money.
Now, it's extraordinary how those things just travel, you know. And it's the things that people repeat that stay with you. Isn't it? You know, it's just up to people, really.
It's up to people to decide that if they like it, it fits. And, and that certainly works.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
So, exactly 40 years ago, June the 10th to June the 23rd, 38p, This particular edition of Smash Hits came out. I was just looking in the attic for some old Smash Hits because I was contributing to Gavin Hogg's Smash Hits Giddy Carousel of Pop podcast about the Flexi Disc, in fact, in 1981. And I was just looking at this guy, and it just reminded me, what an amazingly varied time it was.
It's extraordinary when I look at it now. You've got Jenny from the Bell Stars on the cover.
Yep.
And then you've got Monsoon. Kid Creole.
Interviewed by Neil Tennant. That's right. Kid Creole on the Coconuts.
Blondie, Scritti Politti, Queen, New Order, Classics Nouveau, and Diana Ross.
It's such a variety. I was looking at Fred Della's singles reviews, which are really, really funny. And there's a great one about Vic Goddard, because we've done a little piece about Vic Goddard of Subway Sect, Waiting for Goddard. You've got to admit that.
Yeah, very good.
And how he produced a swing album. He says something like, my Uncle Stan was a big fan of Frank Sinatra, but he couldn't sing. He says, Vic Goddard, big fan of Frank Sinatra too. Unfortunately, he can't sing either. Actually, Vic Goddard did this. I thought it was a really good album, actually. A big single called Hey Now, I'm in Love. But the singles reviews, Fred's singles reviews, you've got Stevie Wonder as a single of the week. And then you've got Smokey Robinson, Dollar, Bauhaus, the Thompson Twins and Funkapolitan. And you think, and tons more. You think, what a great time. Don't you think? It was just so much going on, so much.
So I'm looking at the albums now. I'm trying to see if I reviewed an album because people regularly send me things now as they say, look, you reviewed this 40 years ago. Have you changed your mind?
Have you changed your mind? You really slagged them off. You really slagged Toya off.
Yeah. I didn't review any of these. I got Toya's The Changeling, reviewed by Neil Tennant. We got Patrice Rushen, Bev Hillier. Cabaret Voltaire, Neil Tennant again. John Cooper Clarke, done by Pete Silverton. The Shaking Pyramids, my goodness.
Oh,
everybody had
Tim
a group.
Tim
DeLisle. Everybody had a group like the Shaking Pyramids, didn't they? In the Light of the Stray Cats and so forth. Hamby and the Dance by Neil Tennant. Neil was working his socks
off.
And then the Rolling Stones, Still Life. Life.
Six out
life
of ten. Show.
1981, done by Tim DeLisle. Of course, the Rolling Stones are, as we record this, I think I'm right in saying, Mark, and they're playing Hyde Park, aren't they?
I think they are today.
I think they are today.
Yeah.
Which is, and I was just reading a thing. So 1969 was when they did their first Hyde Park concert, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. So that is how many years ago? That is 53 years ago. And at the time they did it, and this piece I was reading reminded me, they hadn't played live for 2 years.
Really?
That's quite a long time, isn't it?
Well,
they'd had the kind of psychedelic excursion, and they'd, you know, Brian Jones, you know, had been kicked out of the group, and, you know, they got Mick Taylor and everything, but they hadn't actually played live. They'd just done those... Their Satanic Majesties and the second Greatest Hits, whatever that one was called, Through the Past Darkly. And, they hadn't played live. Because they stopped playing live, I think in 1967, they played a university in New York State. And Bill Wyman writes about this in his book. And he said, for the first time, there wasn't any screaming. He says, so we could hear ourselves. We sounded terrible.
We sounded terrible.
And obviously, you know, and actually at Hyde Park, they don't sound great, actually.
They sound very feeble, actually.
They're too quiet.
I wish I'd been there, but I mean, you know, I've just seen the clips that are there, and it's an extraordinary event, the whole thing. The dead butterflies, when he opens the basket of the butterflies. Shoo! And they're trying to get him to take off, and they've all sort of died in his bag. You know?
Absolutely.
Also, what he's wearing, I think he's wearing the most amazing kind of blouson, and he reads the Shelley poem, doesn't he?
He does.
It's an extraordinary thing. The real stars of that day, as far as I can see, were King Crimson. They were the bottom of the bill, weren't they? And they were the absolutely major upcoming act. And
it's amazing.
They played a few club gigs, and then suddenly they're playing to however many people it was. I have really no idea. Was it 60,000, 80,000, 100,000?
It would have been 100,000 at least.
Yeah.
You know, just people were just for miles. The because the amazing thing is, you know, the two acts who played that day are still going. One of the Rolling Stones, the other King Crimson.
Both doing fantastically well. Doing very brisk business.
Yes, it's a long old time ago, isn't it? That,
you know? It is.
So,
it
sorry,
is.
How do we get to the subject of the Stones? Because we're looking at...
Looking at Smashes.
And I noticed also...
Well, Vic Goddard, we're talking about, I bumped into him the other day.
Really?
At a do. Still going, still making records, still producing an album. Good for him. Fantastic. The truth is, nobody gives up. We're going to be interviewing Nige Tassel soon. He's written a book called C86. Whatever happened to the C86 kids? And it's about the 22 acts that were on that cassette that came out in 1986. It'd be quite interesting to see that. I think the majority of those groups are still going. No matter how tiny they were, there's going to be some little convention where they're going to get together.
There will be something. Yeah.
It's very hard to let it go.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And it's going back to the issue of Smash Hits.
Yeah, go on.
There's a Nights Out special, which was the live reviews that we'd recently introduced to that point.
Right.
This is 1982. And it's a show in Leeds with Queen, Joan Jett, and the Teardrop Explodes. Which I'm saying is a slightly curious bill.
It's an extraordinary bill.
Isn't it, really?
I can't find that. Is that a live
review?
It's
right at the back. It's
just
letters.
Mark Rusher and Dave Rimmer. Oh, yes. How extraordinary.
Yeah. And I don't know, was it outdoors? I suppose it might have been. And
Queen and Teardrop Explodes. There you go.
And who's the poster on the back? It's Junior. Do you remember Junior?
Junior?
What was Junior's hit called? I can't remember. It was Junior, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, there it is. 40 big top 20 years ago. And still fresh as paint.
The Word Podcast, two cocoa tins and a piece of string.
Okay, any other business? We have to, first business is the winner of the quiz, Alex, because we didn't announce that last night because you were away, so we can now do this. I should explain for the benefit of anybody who hasn't taken part in our quiz, which we've been running now for how long is it?
God, 2 years? 2 years.
2 years, I think. 2 years.
Every Friday.
We've done about 100 of them, haven't we, I think?
Basically, the way this works is it takes place at 6 o'clock every Friday evening. It's the perfect end of the week. Some people turn up with even a small drink.
With a cold drink. And people log in internationally. We have all sorts of pals all over America and stuff.
Outernationally, absolutely.
Yeah.
And takes place on Zoom. But you've got to be a Patreon supporter to be invited, haven't you? That's the way it works. So if you needed a further excuse to be a Patreon supporter, this could provide it. And basically what we do is we give you 10 visual clues via Zoom to the identity of a musical act. And the earlier you identify them correctly... the more likely you are to get a significant haul of points.
But and you only have one shot.
You only have one shot. Go in early
and get it wrong, it's too late.
Absolutely. And so what we do is we don't give a prize every week. We give a prize every month, at the end of every month. So the one we did last night was the last one of the month. And so now Mark has handed over to Alex the sealed envelope
we can reveal the winner. This
with
is
the
exciting.
Price Waterhouse, you know, stamp on the outside of it. And Alex has now added those up to the earlier scores earlier in the month and is now in a position to tell us, are you Alex, who is the winner for the month of June?
Well, yes and no.
You tease.
I know, right?
Et pourquoi? Why can't you say, because there's a tie?
Well, yeah, the result this month, I've done the totting up and it's complicated because we have, having technically won, are three whole people. We have a triple-way tie as things stand.
We all have the same score. That's astonishing.
Oh, Paul Thompson, Chuck Lonson from Swingin' Georgia,
yes,
and Andrew Boland all have 14 points and are on the top spot of the podium.
Fantastic.
So the let theirs be the glory, if not necessarily the prize. they get bragging rights while we sort out what to do about a prize.
That's fantastic.
So if you haven't taken part, you know, it's a fresh start next Friday. You know, you start with a clean slate. You can compete for the first time. We would very much welcome new people into the quiz, new blood. That would be very welcome. But the first thing you have to do is be a Patreon supporter. If you want to be a Patreon supporter, if you go to patreon.com/word in your ear, is that right, Alex?
That is correct, yes.
And you can look up all the various ways that you could get involved, and we'd really appreciate your doing that if you can. Anything further to add, Alex?
Actually, Dave, yes.
Oh, yes. Go on.
We are putting out on the internet this week the podcasts of our Words in the Park event.
Absolutely, which took place last week. Yes.
How brilliant were those?
Let's run through those speakers again. There's Jeff Lloyd, wasn't it? The radio broadcaster and presenter. There was Andy Miller, who's the co-host of Backlisted podcast. Danny Baker, who you'll know is a friend of the parish. And, of course, the great 10cc co-founder and songwriter, Graham Gulman. Brilliant lineup.
Brilliant lineup. Wonderful day. I'm sorry you're not going to be able to hear Alex's rendition of Paul McCartney's I Will, which climaxed the whole thing. But obviously copyright considerations mean that we can't do that.
Run it.
You're just going to have to imagine that.
You've got to imagine that Alex came on dressed in a Sgt. Pepper satin jacket, played I Will on a ukulele.
On a ukulele.
Genuinely, people were in tears.
Not a D.
Tears in a good way.
In the H. Absolutely. And it was all very good. And so you'll get your opportunity to at least hear most of it sometime in the next week. But we'll continue with our full program of Word in Your Ears and Word in Your Attics. Who have we got lined up you'd like to tell people about, Mark?
Well, we've got various people lined up. We've got Chris Blackwell, who's written this fantastic memoir about his life called The Islander.
Yeah.
His life at Island Records, living out in Jamaica. We've got Loudon Wainwright, who I think is a very good value. I love one.
Yeah, I love Loudon Wainwright.
We've got Nigel Tassel, who's written this book about the enemy's C-60.
Yeah.
We've got Julian Lennon coming up. And we've got an old pal of ours called Bruce Finlay, who started Bruce's record shop in Edinburgh and is going to talk
about one of the most famous, I'm going to say, the most famous case of somebody giving their name to record shops in Britain.
Probably is, actually, isn't it?
I think it is.
Bruce's Records.
Unless you know different.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.